All right, it is my pleasure to introduce Bethany Johnston from Nebraska Grazing Lands Coalition. She's the Ranch Transition Task Manager. Thank you. For several years, the Nebraska Grazing Lands Coalition has hosted generational transition workshops for those interested in passing the farm or ranch to the next generation. Due to the daunting task of transitioning the family farm or ranch to the NGLC, the NGLC has hired an individual who will work directly with families interested in taking the estate and transition planning steps. Through grant funds, Bethany Johnston was recently hired by the NGLC Ranch Transition Task Manager to fulfill this position. I'm not going to steal her thunder. There's a lot I could read about this individual, but I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right, thanks for coming and talking about this really important topic that's the future of your ranch or your family ranch. How many in here are more than like second, third, fourth generation ranchers? Okay, there's quite a few of you in the room that your predecessors have already done a good job of passing that ranch down, and so that's something we want to continue. There we go. Pushing it the wrong way. Okay, so I am going to put a disclaimer in here that I'm not a lawyer, and so don't take legal advice from me because I'm not a lawyer now, and I'm not going to be a lawyer at the end of this meeting. So make sure that you guys go and meet with your own lawyer, talk about your situation, because it's going to be different for everybody. So make sure that you go and see them. So when you guys think about transition, what does that look like to you? And I really like this slide in this picture because it shows to me what transition looks like. And I like the Proverbs that says, give with warm hands. So we're not waiting until we're cold and dead to give away the ranch or to transition that. But we need to do that while our parents and our grandparents are still alive. And I'm not just talking about the stuff, but I'm talking about that just generations and of knowledge that we're going to lose if we don't do that transition. So most everybody in here probably doesn't have a complete estate plan. We surveyed participants in our workshop. We had over 100, and 6 of them had their plan done, and they were happy with it. So a lot of you are working on that plan, but if it's not signed and if it's not final and you die tomorrow, your wishes aren't gonna happen. So what are some reasons that that plan isn't done? A lot of it might be, I don't know what I want to do with the ranch. So this is where your vision and your goals are really going to come into play. And I can remember when people used to talk about visions and goals, I was like, oh, please, I don't want to talk about this, so boring. But think about, what do I want the ranch to do in my lifetime, so kind of short term, and then what do I want the ranch to look like after I'm gone? And so think about, this is what I want to have happen. And that's pretty much what your vision and goal for the ranch is, right? So write those down, talk with your spouse or whoever else owns that ground with you, and come up with those visions and goals. Another reason might be that you need help. And so if you guys have your proceedings, if you flip to the page that I have, I listed all of the resources that I know of in Nebraska that you guys can use. So help is out there. And then where do I start? So just like ranch transition is kind of this huge, complex animal, and so where do I start? And I asked Jackie if I could tell this story, but has anybody been to the Goodmanson Sandhills Lab? So you know Jackie and Andy. Andy doesn't know I'm going to tell the story. But Jackie runs marathons, and she was going to run her first marathon, and she hadn't told anybody she was training. And so she went to Andy and said, I need to take the day off. I'm going to go run a marathon. And he just looked at her, and he goes, how far is that? And she goes, it's 26.2 miles. I hope that's right. And he looked at her and just kind of gave her a blank stare and said, 26 miles? I don't like to drive 26 miles, let alone run 26 miles. So when we think about this ranch transition plan, a lot of times it's that 26 miles. Where do I start? So just start with one step at a time. So another thing to ask yourself, we have our vision and our goals. Once we get those written out, I know what I want to have happen to my ranch. What are things that I don't want to have happen to my ranch? What am I going to protect my ranch from? I'll take comments from the crowd. Shout them out. Siblings. Ooh, maybe greedy siblings, right? Mean kids. Okay, what else? I didn't hear that. Division. Okay, so dividing it up. Okay, anything else? Death. Debt. Okay, so if I have debtors, are they going to get the place? Okay, those are some good ones. Here's some other ones I just have. Nursing home. A lot of times we try to plan around keeping it away from the nursing home or the nursing home from getting it. What if we have addictions in our family or in our business? So gambling addiction, drug addictions. What if there's divorce? So that's one that people sometimes will talk about. Other people are worried about stewardship. So I worked for, 60, 80 years getting this place in better condition, and now I'm afraid that it's going to not be managed as well as I would like. And then the other thing with divorce is, what if there's second and third marriages? What if dad dies and mom gets remarried and she can change the will? So there's those things to think about. So those are things kind of on the other side of what do I want to not have happen with my transition. So something really important that I don't like to talk about because I'm not a great communicator. My family's not the most talkative group. But we really do need to talk about communication. And if you look in the proceedings, there's a ranch transition handbook. It's called Ranch Transition When You're Not in Control, and it's actually on the NGLC website. And we have actually written out a script for people that have a hard time communicating with their family. So you can go to that workbook and open up those questions, and then you can just read them over the phone and say, hey, I went to this workshop, we want to answer these questions. You can always blame it on the presenter. I don't have to work with your family 24/7, so it's nice. But the script really helps you get started and ask questions that you need to know. The other thing is, if your family is one of those that blows up when they're in the room together, or they sit and do this and they don't talk, it's fine, whatever. You can do whatever you want. You might have to get a mediator. So these are people that will come in and facilitate those meetings and actually get your family talking. And, I think this is a great resource that we have here in Nebraska that you can get through the Rural Response Hotline. The other thing is counseling. So maybe you have someone in your family that has a mental illness or needs some sort of counseling for that, addiction counseling. So that's something else that you can also get through the hotline. And then there's also what they call farm family coaches. So like Elaine Fraze is up in Canada, does this. Jolene Brown, the task manager job that I took in January is very similar to this. So we can kind of help you get through that. But communication is just so important, and I think a lot of times we talk about the same thing, but we're arguing about it, right? So this spring, it's been raining at my house since March 13th, so we're like, just rained every day. And my mom and dad were sitting at the table having this conversation, and my mom goes, I don't think Linda's going to be able to come up today. She goes, I think she's going to have to reschedule. And my dad looked at her and he goes, the blind lady's never going to make it over these roads, because it was just monsooning. And she's like, the blind lady? What are you talking about? Well, Linda was the lady that was going to put shades in her house. The blind lady, right? So they were talking about the same thing, but they were actually arguing over, well, who's this blind lady and who's Linda? But talking about the same thing. So some things to think about when we're doing ranch transition or farm transition. The golden rule of transition is a little bit different than the one that you probably learned in Sunday school. So this rule is, whoever has the gold gets to make the rules, which means that if I don't own the assets, I don't get to have a say in what happens. So if you own those assets, that is your priority on if you're going to do anything with them, right? So we could decide not to. But as the younger generation, sometimes that's really frustrating when we want to transition back, but we can't because we're not the one making the decisions. So what are some things we can do with that? So when you guys are talking, and if you're the younger generation talking to that generation that owns the ground or the assets, tell them that you have to have access and control when you take over. So you might not own the ground when your parents die, but you need to have that access and control. And we'll talk a little bit on some of the ways that we can do that. And then this is probably one of the reasons why a lot of people don't get their estate plan done, is that whole concept of fair versus equal. So if I have four kids, is it fair that they all get 25%? Well, it might be fair if none of them came back, but what if one came back, helped me build that business? Is that fair then? So we really need to think about how can we make transition fair and not necessarily equal. And one way to do that is to think about compensation. So my parents moved back in 75, I think. So they were there and just started ranching with my grandparents in the 80s. And so in the 80s, it's kind of like financial times now. You couldn't really pay family probably what they were worth. And so, you know, if you have somebody that comes back and you can pay them a fair market wage, that's how you should compensate them. But if you can't, what are other ways that we can do that? So let's say markets have went up. Rob says, you know, markets are going to go up in a couple years. I have the money. Maybe then I can pay that back pay that I owe. So Dave Gaylor and John Baker are retired specialists that used to work on transition in Nebraska and Iowa, and they actually have an Excel spreadsheet that you can go in and figure out even years back what you are owed for compensation. So if you haven't gotten paid for 40 years, a lot of times that number can be pretty high. You know, you're talking $1 million or so. And so maybe that's how you take that fair versus equal and say, well, I never paid the on-farm heir. I'm going to compensate them in my will. So that's an option. The other ways people compensate for unpaid labor is you can maybe have a lower rent. So I get a family discount on the rent. Or you can gift assets in your wills. But the one thing I would warn you guys is if you do this, make sure that everybody knows what's happening so it's not a surprise when the will's read, or if they go back to look at the lease, well, why are you only paying 50% of the lease when market value wasn't that? So make sure that that the rest of the family or the rest of the business people know what's going on. So lawyers. I kind of think of lawyers like doctors. So farm and ranch transition is very specialized. And so just like doctors, we can go to specialists or we can go to a general practitioner. And in Burwell, we had Dr. Hugh move back when I was in high school, and he sees everything under the sun. He sees babies, he sees old people, he sees pregnant people. I mean, he's seen it all. But if you were diagnosed with a brain tumor that was operable, not cancerous or anything, would you want to go to your general practitioner or would you want to go to a specialist? So a lot of times our small town lawyers have to know so much about everything because they're doing divorce, they're doing wills, they're doing child custody, they're doing it all. And so finding a lawyer that's specialized in farm and ranch transition is very important. And it's really important if you get above that tax credit, I think it's like $20 million now, right around there, if your assets are more than that, because they can really help you with that tax planning. The other thing is, do they have experience? So if I find a lawyer that hasn't done this, maybe they work with a firm that I can have the senior partner look it over and make sure that my estate plan is good. But make sure that you have that experience as well. And then the other thing, we had a producer that actually interviewed his lawyers. So usually lawyers will give you a free consultation because they want your business, right? And so he went in and interviewed them So he had a whole list of lawyers. He had his questions, what's it going to cost, all that. And so he would go in and actually interview his lawyers and decide who was going to work for him. So I like that idea. Again, ask around, get references. A lot of times the really good lawyers are hard to get into, or maybe they're not close enough, but you can ask them and they will find people that they've worked with or documents that they've read that they can say, yes, these are good people that know what they're doing. Okay, the last one. Can I pay a lawyer too much? And I heard that this was being recorded, so hopefully I don't get in trouble for this. But this is what my little bit of research showed. So I went and talked to three lawyers that are specialized in estate planning, and I think they do good jobs. And I asked them, because I heard of people that were up on the higher end for that wage. And I said, is that like a good wage, a normal wage? And they didn't say no because they didn't want to get in trouble. But most of them that I asked were right around this number. So they're right in that middle range, the three that I asked. And I feel like they were all really good lawyers. So make sure that you know what you're paying them and that you're not actually overpaying them. The other thing that I get questions about is when you settle an estate, sometimes they will charge a percentage. So mom and dad have died. We're settling the estate, and we're going to charge 1%. And so that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you have a $4 million ranch and they charge 1%, that's like $40,000. And so again, I asked my lawyer friends, and they said, for $40,000, I would have to work every day of the month just on that ranch. And a $4 million ranch anymore isn't, considered real big. So they felt like it was more fair if you pay by the hour, unless you have a really crazy family that's going to sue each other. And then it might be worth the 1%. Okay? So just something to think about. So I want you guys to go out and kind of do your own research and see what we should be paying, right? Okay. So my husband says I'm a cheapskate, but I prefer to think I'm economical. But if I can save a penny, I'm going to, right? So before we go to our lawyer, write down all of your verbal agreements. And that might take a while to remember what they all are. But he needs to know those as well as the written agreements. The second one is to have a clear and united vision. So that means if you and your spouse own the ranch together, you need to agree on what's going to happen with it before you go to the lawyer. Because lawyers are more expensive than marriage counseling, and you might have to get that settled in marriage counseling before you go to the lawyer. Okay, so it's not a counseling session with the lawyer. The other thing I've noticed with people that I've worked with is if they have planned for retirement outside of the ranch, just like Jim Robb talked about, putting that away for retirement, they have more flexibility when they're older and they're ready to transition. Because even if it's a down market, they can still transition because they don't have to rely on income from the ranch. So young people, take notes, start saving if you can. Probably the biggest thing you guys can do, and this is in the proceedings as well, but if you can get help, the Nebraska Rural Response Hotline was developed in the 1980s and has functioned ever since, but they have these clinics that have a financial advisor and an experienced ag attorney, and they'll meet for you an hour and a half, and these clinics have 5 locations every month. So if you have questions or if you want them to go and look at the paperwork you have, they can do that. And the nice thing is they can also run some numbers to see if it's feasible to bring somebody back or if you need to add an enterprise to do that. And then the Grazing Lands Coalition, we also this year just added my position as the task manager, so I can help you guys as well. And then in your proceedings, there's other resources that you can look at. Probably the thing that will save you the most money is if you can organize that information for your lawyer. So a lot of times they ask about what assets do you own, what liabilities do you have, what's your insurance policy. There's all this stuff that either they can gather for you or you can have it ready to go and give that to them. And in your proceedings, there's a website called Ag Transitions that you can fill that out online, and then it's all in one spot. It's really a nice tool to use. Okay, so once we have interviewed our lawyer, we're okay with the price, what do I need to take to them? So it's nice if you can write down your goals and your vision. Remember, we're united as one when we go in with our other family members. They also want to know who owns what and how it's titled, because that's going to make a difference on how you can transfer it. So that might mean that there's LLCs or partnerships involved. You might be a joint owner with a rights of survivorship, but they'll want to know how that's titled. And then also, if you do have entities, how those are set up, and can you even find the paperwork for them? So if Grandpa set this up in the 1970s, are we going to even be able to find the paperwork to find that? And then the thing that I think really helps out the lawyer is if you can do a family tree. So how is everybody related? We talked about some of the issues we might have with liability. Include those on your family tree. So that we're having a very honest family tree that we hope no one else in the family is going to find but the lawyer, right? Don't share this with your family. But you need to have the skeletons out of the closet for that lawyer. So here is the son that has a gambling addiction, and if I give him a $10 million ranch, it's going to be gone. Or how can I set this up that my nephew who has a disability has money, but I'm not messing with his benefits? Okay? So make sure that they know everything that's going on in that family tree. So legal entities, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but these are things that we can put our ground, our cattle into, right? So LLCs, C-corps, S-corps, partnerships are some legal entities. And whenever you guys have a legal entity, or if you're thinking about setting one up, just like you do when you buy a car or a pickup, look under the hood and look at kind of the guts of that paperwork, because the paperwork's only as good as you make it. So the guts under the hood are called different names depending on what legal entity you have, but you can have an operating agreement, bylaws, or a partnership agreement. They all mean the same thing. It just depends on what entity you have. But in that agreement, you would have the exit plan. So if it doesn't work out, let's set that up now while everybody's agreeing, rather than when everybody's not getting along and somebody wants out, okay? So always make sure that when you do that, you have an exit plan. And then you can also put in there who, when, and how much you can buy each other out at. So if you think about, if you're a fourth generation rancher in this room, if your great-grandparents, if they had said, I want everybody that's my heir to be part of the ranch, when you get down into that fourth, fifth generations, you could have 200-300 people trying to run a ranch together. And so this, having this in your operating agreement can say, well, only the people within the LLC can buy out. And so that way you kind of taper back into ownership rather than having, you know, hundreds of heirs on there. The other thing you can do is with an LLC, you can have a manager-operated LLC. So we talked about access and control. That's one way that you could not own the ranch, but still manage it and get benefits from it, okay? So you could have a manager-led LLC, and then you could also set it up where the manager decides who's going to be his or her successor. So you could, if you set this up right, you can kind of see how we can transition that. Another thing in LLCs is you can have voting members and non-voting members. So in-laws, what do you do with them? Right? I mean, that's like the big question. What do we do with the in-laws? So this is somewhere where you could put in-laws. You could have them be part of that entity, but they don't get to vote on what's going on. And so that way, if they leave, it's not as big of a deal as if you have a voting member that leaves. But there's different ways that you could use that to make sure that you have, again, that access and control. Okay, and I hear this one. I hate the entity my parents or grandparents set up. And talking with my lawyer friends, they said this is nothing that money and time and a good lawyer cannot fix. So if you have the money and time, you can turn a C corp, which is kind of this big monster and has a lot of pieces to it, into an S corp where it's not double taxed, okay? But it's going to take money and it's going to take time. So how? We're not going to do that this year, right? We listened to Jim and prices are kind of in the tank right now. Okay? So, but those are things that you can do. You can change it. But again, that golden rule, if we have whoever owns that entity or has voting rights in that entity or owns the ground, they have to make that decision to change it. So if you have a great aunt that has moved to a foreign country to retire, you're going to have to make sure that she's on board with some of these changes. Okay, so this is just to think about what if, then what. So we're going to hope for the best and plan for the worst. And I have to tell you, I'm really good at this, and it drives my mom crazy. She thinks it's so depressing. But we're going to forecast for the unpleasant and then plan what happens if that does actually happen. So some of those things we talked about, disability. So what if I'm the manager or the operator and I get disabled? Does that mean I'm out of a job and I'm off the ranch? Divorce. So what if somebody divorces? Do we want to protect the ranch so if they get remarried that second or third husband isn't influencing them? What about death? And not just death, but death out of order. So what if my, 95-year-old grandma dies? That's expected, right? But what if I have a on-farm heir and he's 25? That makes a difference, right? And if he's the only one listed, what happens then? We talked about creditors and then, again, remarriage. So we can set things up where we can protect the ranch if we want it to stay in the family to do that. The other thing that I hadn't really thought about, but somebody brought up, is now with the DNA testing, it's important how you word your will. So if you say, I want my living heirs to inherit my ranch, what if you have living heirs you didn't know about? And somebody calls up and says, hey, Dad, I want my chunk. So maybe you say, I want my heirs, and then list them, okay? So those are things that I never really thought about till somebody brought that up. Okay. So we just covered our economics and the financial market, and it's not good, right? So what are some things we can do now that's not going to cost us a lot of money? So right now you could gather your team. You could decide who your lawyer is going to be, who's your CPA going to be, do you have a financial advisor, and then I really recommend having an insurance expert, especially for that younger generation that's buying in. So is there life insurance policies you can get? And a lot of that stuff you have to get early, right? Life insurance policy, nursing home insurance, that kind of stuff before it gets too expensive. The other thing is if you don't have money to do it right now, quite frankly, I would put a Band-Aid on it. So what am I most afraid of happening to my ranch? So you could put your list in there. But you could turn verbal agreements into written ones. And that's something you guys could write down, right? If I have share cows, and my dad actually owns the cows, and I'm running them on shares, and he dies, they're not my cows anymore, right? That calf crop's not mine. And so there's things that you could write out and kind of put a Band-Aid on there until you get the rest of the paperwork done. Another really great tool is long-term leases. So leases cost, a couple $100,000 to write up. But you can make those really long-term. You could make them 40 years. I think you could even make them 99 years. Ask your lawyer. But you can make these really long-term leases that if I don't get the paperwork done, at least I have access and control to that ground or animals or whatever we're renting. Okay? So long-term leases are a good way to go, too, if your paperwork's not all the way done. And then there's other things you can do and kind of tack it on. So if it does sell, can I have first right to buy it back? Do I get the first offer? Or you could do some buy-sell agreements, okay? So those are other things that you can do. Now is also a great time. We talked about all those things you have to get together for the lawyer. You can do that now. It's not going to cost you any money to do that. And so now is a great time to get that done. When you go in and you're interviewing your lawyer, and again, usually that first meeting's free, so interview as many as you want. Kind of get estimates and steps like you would from a contractor. So how much would it cost to do my will? How much would it cost to do this? And so that way you can kind of rank on this is the most important thing we have done. And then like Jim Robb said, when we have the money, we can go spend it on that and work on that estate plan. Yep, so then when the cattle market goes up, we have a plan that's ready to go. We had a lawyer that we actually heard in South Dakota, and I really liked how he put this. Sometimes people set up their estate plan almost like to divide and destroy the place, right? So these are stories to make you hopefully light a fire under your butt and get you going if we haven't already, but to kind of scare you into doing something. So this is what I call the do-nothing plan, although I like this option better. So at my funeral, everyone gets a stun gun. Last person standing gets all my stuff. That'd be an interesting funeral, right? But sometimes we do nothing, and it's almost the same thing. Once they die, family can get pretty crazy. Other things that are really hard on farm and ranch transition is if the land is split up. So let's say I own three sections. I have three kids. Each of them get a section, and I'm going to assume that they're going to sell to the on-farm heir. Even if that's possible, they're probably going to want fair market value. And so let's say I live to be 95 years old. How old does that make my kids when they inherit it? Probably in their 60s, 70s. And so is it feasible for my kids to buy out their siblings when they're 65 years old and they have to get a note from the bank? So depending on how big your family is, that might be an option. But those are things to think about, because when my grandpa bought the farm from his dad was in his 60s and he was in his 30s. And I think his dad died fairly young, but that's just how it was, is when you were 30, you took it over. And now people live longer and they can ranch longer, right? So think about, is it going to be feasible? And then another issue that you can run into is if they've set it up as undivided interest. So this is also called tenants in common. And the problem with this is that there's no rules, right? We don't have that operating agreement to look at like we would an entity. And so it's kind of a free-for-all. And the other thing that's, I guess, good or bad is if, regardless of the percentage that you own, you can actually force a sale. So let's say I have two kids. There's one I really like and one I don't really like at all. So I'm going to give this kid 99% and this other kid 1%. The kid with 1% can actually go to court and force a sale of the ranch so he can get his 1%. So it doesn't matter. There's no majority here, okay? So that's a really big issue that you can get into. And it's kind of an all or none decision. So tenants in common are real common in apartments, like people that own apartments together. So who's going to rent it? So if I have farm ground, who's going to rent my farm ground? And do we all have to agree? What if one person doesn't agree? What if one person decides they're not going to pay their taxes? What if one person decides they're not going to pay their repairs? So if your kids aren't going to get along, I can remember you couldn't put us in the back seat together, so why would you think that we're going to, be happy with each other as tenants in common? So just kind of an FYI. But it's very easy to sell as tenants in common. And then, again, if we don't set up what we need to protect our ranch from, more than likely that could come back and get us, right? The other one that I'm not going to talk about, but it's very important for you guys to plan for, is the nursing home, this long-term care. It's very complex and all of that, but we used to rely on that the government's going to take care of us and pay for my nursing home. But when you own a multi-million dollar business, that's probably not going to happen. In order to get those benefits, you need to be very poor and not have hardly any assets to do that. So nursing homes are what? $10,000 a month? per person. And so, you know, if you have two parents in the nursing home, it's almost $250,000 a year. And the average stay is 3 years. So you better hope that you're not on the 10-year plan and it's the other way. But those are things that you need to think about. Can I get nursing home insurance for them, or do I have the money available that maybe I sell cows as that money's due? But it's really hard to, from what I understand, it's very hard to protect the ranch anymore from that nursing home. You're going to have to pay for nursing home yourself, pretty much. And then the other thing is, you know, divide into stories if you have no or very poor communication. I can remember I was talking to this guy, and he was telling me all about his estate plan, and it was actually a really good estate plan. And I was like, that's great. I go, who do you have back working with you? And he goes, oh, well, I haven't told him yet. Like, he had a kid that didn't even live on the farm, had this wonderful plan, but he hadn't told the guy that was supposed to come back and take it over. So communication is also very important. And then I think we need to ask ourselves this question, would I do this if I wasn't related? So these are quotes that I have heard from people in a transition or in an estate plan. So the parents say, don't worry, we'll take care of you. Just don't worry about it, we'll get it taken care of. And then the someday son, this will all be yours. I've heard this one, your sister has a family to take care of. We can only afford to pay her wage, and since you don't have a family, you're not going to get one. Okay? And then I just don't want to talk about whatever your hot topic is. So think about if I wasn't on a family farm or a family ranch, if I was actually working for somebody, would I put up with that? Okay, so we need to really think about, are we running this as a business, or are we, you know, kind of skimming over some things that could really be bad for the future generation? And so if these are things that you're hearing, or if the estate plan is set and is set in stone and you can't change it, and you're younger, you're going to have to start growing your business yourself, right? Maybe leasing ground from the neighbors or trying to buy ground. But, you know, just be realistic in the fact that it might not work out like you want, right? We would love, if we're the on-farm heir, to inherit it all, but I don't know if that happens very much. If it does, adopt me. Hope I'm the only one. Okay, the other thing that we should think about is who's going to take care of my stuff when I'm gone. So these are the fiduciary duties. And Pam Olson does a lot of workshops for us. She's an ag attorney here in Scotts Bluff. But she says these are the people that are going to be digging through your underwear drawer, right? So when you're gone, who's going to have to sort all that stuff out? They're going to see everything. And you can have different people do different things. So maybe I have somebody that I want to have take care of my financials. It might not be the same person that I want doing my health directive, right? And so Pam says when you're on your deathbed and your heart monitor's going and the person that's at the end of your bed deciding what's going to happen to you, is your heart rate going to stay the same or is it going to go beep because you're so nervous, right? So make sure you pick the right person for the job. And then also, who's going to manage the ranch if something happens to me? And the one thing I really like that Pam does is she'll do a ranked list. And the reason for that, again, is what if somebody, you know, gets disabled or dies or can't do the duties? And so if you have that ranked list, you're not having to go to court to reappoint somebody for that. The other thing to think about is, does it have to be family? So for my family personally, I've seen some interesting transitions in my short lifetime, but there's sometimes I think having non-family members in charge is almost better. Like, we treat people better if we're not related to them. So sometimes you could have the bank or even the lawyer do some of these duties, and it kind of takes out the sibling rivalry a little bit. And we already talked about the ranked list. So these are just some of the resources that I think are really nice. This is Ag Transitions out of the University of Minnesota, and they do ask you to create an account. They're not going to go in and read your stuff, but I wouldn't put my Social Security number and stuff on here just in case. But you can go in and put all, it has all the information that you need. What do I need from the owning generation? What do I need from the successor? And what are my visions? What are my goals? Where's this bank account at? So it goes through everything that you need. But then the nice thing is you can actually share that with your attorney, share that with your CPA, share that with multiple generations. And they can either edit it or not. But I really like that website because you can get that together and then print it and take it to your lawyer and have everything done. This is another good one that we really like to use, an extension, aglease101.org. They actually had lawyers develop template leases that you can go in and look at, and then it's everything under the sun. So more than likely, you're going to have to cross off some of those things because they just put everything in there just in case. But that's a really nice website if you're looking to do a lease. So that's all I have, and I will actually take questions.